This is Page Turners, the broadcast book club brought to you by Muncie Community Schools on WMUN, the talk of Muncie, 92.5 FM, 1340 AM, and Alexa say, play WMUN. Let's join the story now with your hosts, Cam and TC.
Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning.
That's sorry. A big stretch. I know. You know how I am. I'm always up late reading books and things like that. Last night was no different.
What was you reading?
Well, I'm big into magic, as you may know, and I got a new book. Not the one that we're talking about today, because when we actually talked to our guest, it wasn't out yet. So you can imagine my excitement for when it does come out and I can read it.
So everything she said on that conversation, talk about the buildup and anticipation.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I should probably mention who we were going to talk to today, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Or should I make him wait more?
We'll make him wait another 30 seconds. I'm just kidding.
No, that's too long. That's too long. Well, everybody, we got to sit down and talk to a first-time author, Rania Hanna. If I remember correctly, who was a neuroscientist, and she decided to write a book.
Yeah. And it was an awesome conversation.
Oh, it was fantastic. And honestly, if you ask me, I've never been more excited to read a book in my entire life. So we should do it, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I think so. I think we should roll it. What do you think?
Well, let me grab my tea. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, I'm good. Yep, let's do it.
Hit play?
Yeah, now.
Right now?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
No, tomorrow.
Here we go.
Give our readers or our listeners, really, like a couple of sentences of what the Gin Daughter is so that we can get rolling.
Yeah, so it is a fantasy novel with a kind of magical realism, and it's really centered around a necromantic storytelling djinn named Nadine. And it's kind of a mix of, I would say, The Scarlet Letter, in the sense that she's living alone, ostracized from society for what she's done or who she is, living with her young daughter, Layala. And Nadine's job really is to tell the stories of the dead. So because of her magic, because she's a djinn, really, her djinn magic, she gets these pomegranate seeds every morning. They fall in front of her home, her cottage in the woods, and she has to pick up the seeds and eat them. When she eats them, she kind of picks up on the different stories of the soul stories, and she can tell the stories, which allows them, the souls, to then pass on to the final gate of death. So with all this, she's a mother at the end of the day. She is taking care of her young daughter, who is starting to come into her own a little bit and starting to question a lot about her mother and their life and her mother's magic. And she's also questioning whether she has magic herself. Of course, there's a lot of, you know, mother-daughter bond there, but there's also some tension because Layala is a 14-year-old girl living alone in the woods with her mother. So there's a lot of tension there, a lot of growing pains. There's a lot of grief as well, just because Layala's father, he is actually dead, but he's also among the living. So he visits them as a spirit, as a soul, and he's limited because he is actually still dead and he's kind of stuck in death. And so Layala doesn't really understand why this is. And so there's a lot of grief around that as well, with Nadine also grieving her dead lover.
Now, where did this story come from? Because that's really interesting. And we've talked a lot about different types of magic users and different types of, you know, like just magic theories in general. And this one really caught my attention as I was talking to your agent, because it's so interesting and different. We don't usually see that sort of thing.
Yeah, a lot of it really comes from my dad, really. So I'm Syrian. I'm Syrian American. My parents are the immigrants. I am the child of immigrants. And so Middle Eastern culture has a lot of oral tradition. We tell our stories orally. And so I grew up being fed a steady diet of tales my dad told me. And he's a wonderful storyteller. He is so exceptional. He is just so beautiful in the way he brings to life characters and tales. And so a lot of the book was really based around how he told me stories growing up, because nothing was written down. He never read to me. He just told me tales. And so it's very like 1001 Nights, where there's a lot of smaller tales kind of woven into the larger narrative. And so that's kind of very, very Middle Eastern, very folkloric. And actually, the core, I would say, or the kernel of the story came about when I was reading Tahra Mafi's Witchwood. If anyone's read it, it's really good. It's an exceptional little novel. It's middle grade fantasy. And I actually read the book and really liked the story, the aspect of it, of being this like corpse cleaner, this soul cleaner. And I kind of took from that this idea. After I read the book, I was kind of thinking about it. And I really liked this idea about passing on souls. When I was younger, my first fantasy book was Sabriel by Garth Nix, and this idea of necromancy and dark magic and death magic really appealed to me. And so kind of combining all of those, Jin Daughter kind of happened, and it kind of grew into its own story. I wasn't really sure where I was going to go with it, but it kind of, once I started writing the first line, it kind of just expanded, and I really, again, pulled from a lot of the folk tales, the folkloric aspects that I had growing up.
Could you describe to our listeners what your writing process looks like? Do you plot outline, or is it more organic? Does it come naturally?
I don't plot. I have attempted to plot. It never works out. I always veer away from the plot. So I'm very much a discovery writer. I just start writing and I kind of go where the story goes. I'm a researcher. So, you know, part of research is you kind of follow the data. And so that's kind of what I do with writing, is I just follow the story. I follow the characters. It's almost like reading when I write, because I'm learning the story. I'm learning about the characters. I'm learning what happens as I'm writing. So it's always a new day for me. Like, I never know what's going to happen. But when I do write, like as I get more into the story, usually I'd say the last third or so, I start doing mini outlines just so I kind of know where things are going, because I have an idea of how things need to end and I kind of need to get there a certain way. But again, I still veer off the path. It's just never following the outline. Sometimes I don't even know how I'm going to get to the ending, if I'm going to get to the ending. And sometimes the ending is not what I expected. So I'm just very discovery, and I'm okay with that. I find it more fun and interesting because I am figuring it out as I go. And there's a certain surprise element there that's very enjoyable as a writer, because it makes me the reader as well while I'm writing.
Well, and I think that too comes into play, because you were talking about how your dad would tell you stories. So hearing you say, oh no, the story takes me wherever it wants to go.
Yeah,
that tracks.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But it also feels like at that point, you know, and there are some authors out there who are very plot driven to the point where mm-hmm. they're just doing A, B, C, D. But sometimes that can be very mechanical. Mm-hmm. Especially when we get into like fantasy. I've read some fantasy stories or magic stories where it just feels like we're checkmarking off of places. So yeah. To hear that you're a little bit more organic with your storytelling almost makes me more excited to dig into it, because I'm like, oh, okay, this might feel like you're just telling me a story.
I hope so.
Now, as we're talking about, you know, your writing process and anything like that, do you have anything that you have to do as you're writing, or any like weird little habits or tics that you have as you're writing?
Not really. I would say I'm a very boring writer, in the sense I just kind of sit down where I sit down and write. I have these Turkish cushions, so they're very low on the ground. They're very, think like a Bedouin tent. It kind of looks like that, like a little rug and cushions. And so I tend to sit there a lot. It's in the corner. I have a pot of tea. I always have a pot of tea. I live on tea at this point. And so I just sit and write, and that's what I do. So I don't really have any writing habits per se, except just sitting down. I also I sometimes write in cafes as well. So I'll just find a corner. I would say it's always in the corner. I need a corner. I'd say that's probably the more specific thing, is I need to feel kind of cozy. And so I do tend to seek out cozy spots. I'm like by a window, but kind of tucked in the corner. I have a heating pad because I'm cold in like 85 degree weather. So I just constantly need warmth. And that's really what I do. I just get cozy and write.
That tracks, you know, I've got, well, and I have a studio at my house that is like a hobbit hole. It really is. I've got greenery that's on the ceiling and so much. So it's like Howl's Moving Castle, but in my own little home where that's, there's just stuff
sounds
everywhere.
Wonderful.
And
that sounds wonderful.
It's my cozy little place. That's where I go to create and write and do everything kind of similar to what you're talking about.
Yep, exactly.
Don't turn that dial. Our conversation will continue right after this break, right here on 92.5 FM, 1340 AM.
This is Page Turners, the broadcast book club brought to you by Muncie Community Schools on WMUN, the talk of Muncie, 92.5 FM, 1340 AM, and Alexa, say play WMUN. Let's continue the story now with your hosts, Cam and TC.
I'm Ronnie Hanna. I wrote The Gin Daughter, and you are listening to Page Turners.
I'm curious if you had a favorite character in that story to write. Like every time you got to that character, you got a little extra excited.
I'd say two characters. So one being Ilyas, which is the dead lover. Really because I built his personality, and not even necessarily the personality, but kind of the feel of him around my husband and dad, who of course I care about very much. And so Ilyas, I just have a really soft spot for him. He's just a special character, and he's such a loving character. In my mind, Ilyas embodies love in the story, in the sense that he's the character who is the most outward facing. He's the most caring because, I mean, he's dead. He really can't do anything else but love. And so he loves Nadine. He loves his daughter. You know, he has a rough relationship with his father, which kind of comes into play in the story, but he still tries to show love throughout. And so he's very special in that way. But I would say Gamuna, who is the goddess of death, just because of her darkness and her raw power to do certain things and to frankly just not care what anyone wants or thinks. She just does what she wants. She will get what she wants. She really doesn't care if you're offended. She does her own thing. But at the same time, she still has, I would say, empathy. And so that kind of comes into play later where she's also a mother. She has a maternal side. And so she kind of understands Nadine, where she's coming from at certain things. So Gamuna, and I don't know if this is necessarily a spoiler, but she comes in and wants Leala to take over as the new goddess of death. Nadine obviously doesn't want that. And so Gamuna tries to convince her. And again, she's just going to do what she wants to do. She's the goddess of death. She couldn't care less what, you know, what Nadine wants. But she starts to really develop as her own character and as a mother, and to develop even as a person and recognize that this is a major sacrifice for Nadine, and she's going to fight her on it because they're both mothers. And at the end of the day, that's really the core of it, is that both of them are trying to hold on to love while also in the midst of really deep, raw grief. And so it was really fun writing her as well. Nadine's also a favorite, but I would say she's not even necessarily a top favorite compared to those two.
I like how you talked about the goddess of death having empathy, because we always think about death and all of that in such a heavy kind of sad way. And, you know, we've lost one of our beloved pets right before Christmas. Aww. So we've gone through this, you know, five stages of grief. Yeah. And how we get through it. And it's so refreshing to hear somebody talk about it in an empathetic way, or to describe death as being empathetic in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about your favorite characters and which ones you really like to write for. I want to know the opposite. I want to know which ones were really challenging for you to write, if at all any.
I would say Ilyas's father, Sheikh Hamadi. He is a selfish, horrible person. His only saving grace, I would say, is that he loves his granddaughter. But everyone else, he is so cruel to. He is part of the Jinn Wars. And so Nadine, again, is a Jinn. And he was part of imprisoning and killing off djinns because humans wanted djinn magic and he was part of that. He's very power hungry. He's very selfish. He just wants things his own way, but he lacks Kamuna's humanity, even though she's not even human anymore and he still is. He lacks that core component of being a human being. I mean, he's just such a not nice person at all. And so writing him, I really struggled to, in a sense, provide something that was like a saving grace for him. Mm-hmm. And so Leala was that saving grace again. But apart from that, it was such a struggle because I just don't like him as a character. And it was really hard writing a scene with him in it a little towards the end or like middle end of the book where there's something very important happens with him. And it was, I thought it would be a lot more emotional than it was, but I was frankly happy for certain things to happen because I felt like he deserved it. So.
Karma.
Yeah, it was definitely karma.
I love it when karma shows her ugly head.
Yep.
Pretty head, whichever way we're going on that one.
Whatever. Just said.
Do you have a favorite line or quote from your book?
Honestly, I feel like the first line, you know, the dead have been dropping all night. It sets up the scene. It sets up the story and it really sets up the magic of the world where Nadine, her magic, her only purpose in life, apart from her daughter, is serving as this, you know, storyteller for the souls. And she does that through the seeds. And so the dead and death are very important to her and very, it's frankly, oddly, the thing that holds her to life. Without this aspect of being this Hakawati or storytelling djinn, she frankly has no reason to live in terms of the townspeople's eyes. If they didn't need her, they would frankly kill her off. And so this idea of the dead have been dropping all night really serves to highlight the importance of her role in society. Even though she's really not respected, it still allows her to keep living without, you know, necessarily having people hammering down her door every day trying to kill her and her child.
Now, you know, we've talked a little bit about the characters and some of the plot points, but as you have readers who are going through the book, is there a theme or a takeaway that you want them to kind of think of as they're going through it?
I'd really say the idea of Middle Eastern folklore and culture, just because I think a lot of times, you know, people see, especially in the West, see the East in a certain light. And I really want this idea about community and selflessness coming in through these characters, through the stories that are woven into the tale itself. So again, it's very 1001 Nights. You have these little fables, these little folkloric stories woven into the tale. And they're not necessarily attached to any of the plot points per se, but they embody certain values of the Middle Eastern community. And a lot of it is about hospitality, generosity, sharing, you know, not being selfish, you know, accepting fate in some ways and how to deal with grief. And so I really want people to come away thinking and believing that, you know, Arabs, Middle Easterners are more than these cliches or these stereotypes of, you know, we're just nomadic desert wanderers. I very, very intentionally did not set the setting as a desert. I absolutely didn't want that. I wanted it to be woodsy and I wanted it to be set in a town in a village, even though that's kind of secondary because the main characters don't really interact with the townspeople as much, except in a very negative way. But I very intentionally did not want to focus on these cliche settings that are in associated with Middle Eastern stories, right? It's not like in a palace, it's not in the desert, there's no sand, you know, it's a river, it's the woods, it's the mountains, and it's death. So I really wanted to focus on the imagery that I think pulls also from our language, from Arabic. So Arabic itself is a very symbolic, it's a very powerful language. It's a very imagery heavy language. We use a lot of symbols. And so, you know, like my dad says, he calls me his moon, right? Like that's a very normal thing. And that's just so normal for us to be called these certain things and to have a lot of imagery in our speech and the way we interact and communicate with each other. And so I really want that kind of coming out and really having people appreciate that aspect of our culture and our language. And I think, again, also with Arabic as a language, I know sometimes in the media, it's portrayed as a very rough and aggressive sounding language, and it's really not. It's quite musical. And I really hope the cadence of my writing, you know, writing it a little more lyrically, a little more with certain prose that kind of draws attention to the fact that Arabic itself is a very lyrical language. It's a very symbolic imagery laden one. And I really hope that people appreciate that and maybe think about us a little differently than what the media likes to portray us as. And so I really, really hope that comes out. And I really hope the, you know, idea of this connection to nature and to others really shows up, because I really wrote that in there. I really tried to show, you know, we're all connected. And I think it's important that people remember that.
That's all the time we have for this chapter of Page Turners. But don't worry, we're back every Saturday morning from 8 to 8:30 a.m. Thank you to our sponsor, Muncie Community Schools. And from Cam and I, we'll see you next week. Right here on 92.5 FM, 1340 AM.
That's the end of this chapter of Page Turners, the broadcast book club with Cam and TC, brought to you by Muncie Community Schools. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join the story again next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. with Cam and TC for another chapter right here on WMUN, the talk of Muncie, 92.5 FM, 1340 AM, and Alexa say, play WMUN.